We like to always say that this is as much your podcast as it is mine and the Amigos. So we want to invite you guys to join us on all of our new platforms for this season. We're on YouTube now. Just search for Call to Arms Podcast right there. And if you guys like the Facebook page, Call to Arms Podcast, truth be told, we don't exactly know what a Facebook page does anymore or what it's supposed to contain or anything like that. So we went ahead and kind of made it into a group, into like this community. So just search for Call to Arms Podcast Community, where you can meet all the other hoopworms, all the other listeners of the pod. You guys can talk about what you'd like to hear on the pod, what you didn't hear on the pod, what you liked, what you didn't like. We can argue about which Fast and Furious movie is the best one. It's, you know, all fair game. So search for us there, join the conversation, and we can't wait to keep this going with you guys. My name is Nico Ramos, and this is the Call to Arms Podcast.
Something going on around the islands. Money flowing wherever I've been promised. Just another Viking in the tropics. Taking over, trying to stop this novice. Make it killing, I'm finna conquer. I'm a dreamer, the floor is lava. Something going on around the islands.
Coach, I wanted to, I don't want to take the whole trip down memory lane with your career, because that's going to be like a 10-part episode, 10-episode conversation right there. But I did want to hit on a couple of things that were brought up by some of our guests in season one. You see, you've been a recurring topic for a lot of the people we've spoken to on this podcast. Coach Tim Cohn was on the podcast in season one. And we were having this conversation, and, you know, he still claims to this day. Now, I want to get you on the record if you believe him or not, but he still claims to this day that in 03, he was ready, willing, and going to pick you up and draft you first overall. But then you broke your hand before the draft. And he says that's why you dropped and why you weren't an Alaska ace. Do you remember any conversations? Do you remember any inkling leading up to that OT draft when you were like, oh, okay, I think I'm going number one here?
No, you know, honestly, Nico, back then, you know, it was such a long time ago. But I mean, I remember in 2002 when I got hurt in my first game. Like, to this day, I tell so many people, it was really one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. just because, you know, the lead up to me debuting for the national team, you know, there was so much talk about, you know, why is this guard from the States who's not 6 foot, he's not even in the PBA, like what is he doing here? And, you know, I knew I was performing well, and I think I had earned the respect of the guys at practice, so I really just wanted to be on the court to show that I deserve to be out there. The first 5 minutes of the game, I break my hand. And mind you, through high school, college, had never had any major injuries like that. And here I am at the free throw line, about to shoot a free throw, knowing in my head, like, my hand's broken. You know, and so I knew going into 2003, a lot of what people felt or maybe were concerned with, you know, that I wasn't, you know, this physical specimen, I guess, as a point guard, you know, it wasn't going to help. And, you know, I think that's why I ended up falling to number 10.
But when you came in, you know, and, you know, I remember the articles on the newspaper. Social media wasn't, you know, what it is then. But I remember the articles in the newspaper, you know, Jimmy Alapag, and I'm like, who? Because even without Twitter or Instagram, the selection to the national team then is still as newsworthy, if not even more, as it is now. Like, who makes it to the cut? Like, who, you know, and back then there wasn't no program. There wasn't no pool of these 20, 30 guys who can alternate, come in and out depending on the game. Back then, it was essentially, these are our 12 best players. And I saw this name, Jimmy Alapag, and like, he's from the States. And then they listed you at 5'11". And then I saw you for the first time. And then I was like, 5'11".
give or take.
but I knew you wanted to go in there, and obviously, you know, that situation didn't happen for so many, you know, for a lot of guys to come in and and immediately be part of national team selection. Were you expecting to go higher than 10?
No, absolutely. Because after I'd gotten hurt, I had almost 5 months, I believe, with all those guys. And you're talking the best, right? When you talk about Eric Menk, Kenneth Duremdes, Dondon Hontiveros, Olson Rossella. I mean, I'm with these guys every day practicing against them. So that gave me like an unbelievable barometer of what to expect if I wanted to be at their level in the PBA. And so, you know, when I left to come back to the States, you know, I made a promise to myself because, again, I was embarrassed. You know, you come back and everyone's like, hey, I thought you were playing overseas in the Philippines. What are you doing home? And it's like, you got to kind of put your, you know, your head between your legs. Like, I got hurt. And again, you know, it was tough, but I really made a promise to myself that when I came back that I was going to be ready. And, you know, did it hurt that all the teams passed on me? Yeah, for sure. And, you know, and I think I kept that chip on my shoulder throughout my career, because I knew how dedicated I was to the game. I knew I knew where my heart was, and you know, things worked out. You know, I'm thankful for the career that I had.
Does your good friend Harvey Carey still hold it over your head that he went 4-6 spots ahead of you?
No, you know what's funny. I was so like hyped up, man, because you know Harvey and I, we played against each other in college here in the States. When I got back, not too many people know this story. When I got back the summer of 2002, there was a Filipino tournament in Las Vegas. Mm. And I went up there to play with some local and some Phil-Am guys from Southern California. And he was playing with a team with some of his buddies up in the Bay Area, up in Northern California. And, you know, we ended up talking after one of the games and he was asking about my experience. And you know, we just kind of connected from there and said, hey, well, you know, I'll see you in December. And sure enough, fast forward 6 months later, we connected in Manila. We were working out the whole time leading up to the draft. And I mean, I was so hyped that he went 4th. And I was really expecting to go right around there with him, if not, you know, whether it was 5 or 6 or whatever, and it just didn't work out that way. But at the end, it did work out because, you know, my experience in the PBA would not have been the same without Harvey. You know, not only did he catch so many of my passes, but to be able to go through your professional career with somebody who you consider family, I have a much deeper appreciation. Not that I didn't appreciate it before, but being away from the game now, being retired, the relationship that him and I built and the brotherhood that we have that extends far beyond the game, I have a much deeper appreciation for now because I'm not in that space anymore.
It's funny you say that because when we had Coach Tim on, he brought up that they also had the number 5 pick. And that
I know.
And then he said he'd already drafted a point guard in Mike at number 1, which is a spot they really needed. And then at 5, at five he was like, oh, you know, Jimmy's still there, but they went with B-Cab Brandon Kablai, who you know, all love to Brandon Kablai.
Hey, and Nico, to be honest, man, because Brandon's my guy. To me, in all my years playing in the PBA, easily one of the most athletic guards I have ever seen. Like, he was out of this world athletic. You know, I mean, unfortunately, you know, the injury slowed him down, but man, you know, I wish social media was around during that dunk contest our rookie year, because that was incredible, man.
Now it's great that you say that, because there's a lot of you know, insider, now it's kind of like urban legend conversations around this draft class, because unlike you, that people kind of saw and got a feel for because of the national team stuff. Mm-hmm. Brandon, when he came in, and I love Brandon Kublai. Brandon Kublai is like OG Team Titan. I mean, he's one of the first guys who really wrapped our brand. When he came in here, nobody knew anything about Brandon Kublai. He wasn't even, is this true? He wasn't even working out for a whole bunch of other teams because...
No, he didn't.
Because he was set. He knew.
Hey, but get this. But get this, Nico. Here's another story that a lot of people don't know. Before I came back for the draft, so this was after my injury in 2002, before I came back to Manila, was this December of 02? Because at the time, the draft was January of 03, right?
Right.
Brandon and I worked out together out here.
Okay.
Yeah, and we had a chance to work out, and yeah, I mean, you know, he was a little bit bigger than me, you know, played at the same, you know, college level, and the one thing that really stood out was like, man, this dude can really, like, at that time I could get up, but Brandon was next level type athleticism. So, you know, I mean, I really didn't expect to go to Alaska. You know, Mike had such a decorated career at LaSalle. You know, he was the name of our draft, him and Romel and Enrico. And everything that people knew about me was the small guard who got hurt in 2002. So, you know, that wasn't helping me going into the draft.
It went Mike Cortez first, Romel Adukul second. I'll circle back to him. Eddie Lowry third to Shell. Harvey four. Brandon at five. Billy Mams, who's still doing his thing along with Harvey, he went six. Enrico seven. Marlon Legaspi eight.
Raynell
nine. And then you at 10. Now, I want to bring up two people here, two big men, right?
Yep.
First of all, really quickly, the number nine pick, Raynell Hugnatan, drafted by Coke. I'm not sure if you saw this. It's 2021. He just got nominated. Just got nominated for most improved player.
I saw that.
Shout out Papa Ray. And by the way, there's a distinction. Papa Ray is Raynell Hugnatan. Fafa Ray is the other Ray. All right? So make sure you guys make that distinction. Coach, the coaches over at Miralco have corrected me before. But I mean, wow. Most improved at year what?
19? 18?
That's crazy.
18. It's amazing. And you know, one of the greatest parts about me coming back out of retirement, my 1 year with Morocco, was not only getting a chance to be with Basera and Chris Newsom, but to finally be teammates with Raynell Hugnatan. Because not only were we drafted together, we played on a bunch of all-star games together, but we were never teammates in the PBA. And I'll tell you, you know, for all your listeners, Nico, like, Papa Ray, man, he's just like the smoothest dude. He's just like the ultimate pro, you know, an incredible work ethic, quiet leadership, you know, when he speaks, people listen. And he's just, man, he just has this vibe about him, man. Like, you know, I always made it a point, especially when I got to Morocco, because it was a younger team, that I wanted to be there early. And I swear to you, I don't know how, I mean, it was almost every day when I would walk in, who would be walking in right next to me with his coffee? It'd be Papa Ray in his chinelas. I'd be on one side, he'd be on his other, and we would go through our regular routines. And yeah, it was just awesome, man. I mean, like I said, from the character, the work ethic, the leadership, and the footwork, you know, I've always said
so
it smooth. In my career, I think, you know, it's not even close that him and Ronadell, their footwork, it was just next level. And, you know, even before them, Dennis Espino, I think those three guys, man, they would just torture you when they get you in the post. And it was really cool that I got a chance to play with both Dell and Papa Ray.
It's funny because Coach Ronnie Magsanok used to run this game at the Meralco gym. Mm-hmm. Right before practice would start for you guys. Yeah. And he'd invite a select number of guys. And some of them were some practice players that were trying to break the roster for Miralco. Some of them were guys that, you know, maybe were on his team B, or guys he was working with that were a little young. And some of them were just, you know, average Joes like me, who he knew would, you know, play the right way and wouldn't try to do too much and play defense, stand in the corner and shoot an open three every once in a while. But you had to be there. You had to be at Meralco Gym at 6 a.m. And then we'd get a run in before practice would start with you guys. And practice start, we'd all have to be out of there. And I'm telling you, 10 times out of 10, after we'd play, after we'd do our little 1 hour, hour and a half run, as we're told, all right, you know, that's it, practice about to start, as we're leaving, it was always Papa Ray parked right there, right by the door, door open, like coffee in his hand, and he'd always be like, good morning. I'd be like, you're here already? Again? And he's like, yeah, just, and like, sometimes he talks smack at me too. He's like, oh, sumili pa ako kanina. Like, your jumper's wack. Like, yung jump shot mo, nakwenta. And I'd be like, come on, man, cut me a break. But apart from him, the other guy I wanted to talk to about this draft, I didn't know we'd get this much out of the 03 draft, was pick number 2, Romel Aducol. And you said he was one of the big names entering that draft. I was so curious because I just never remembered this happening before. But you know, YouTube has everything. So I YouTubed Jimmy Alapag fight. Sure enough, there's you getting frisky with Romel Aducol. And I know it's only like a 41 second clip, but they replay it over and over again. I'm watching it right now. There's a rebound. Yeah. You guys are tied up. And Jim, you know I love you. I have the Alapag jersey hanging right here. Every house I've moved to has had that. But you guys are tied up. And you judo toss him into the crowd and then walk away with your hands up going, oh, I didn't do anything. And I'm I don't remember this version of Jimmy. I don't remember this happening.
To give you a little background on that particular incident, I mean, we're in the finals. I think that was when Romel was with Powerade.
They
had made their run to the finals, and I forget what game that was. It might have been game one or game two. But, you know, there was always a little bit of that rivalry with Romel because, you know, before he was with Powerade, he was with Ginebra. And back in, again, you know, social media wasn't around back then. But in 2004 and 2005, when we played them in the finals, they beat us. And he played well. And, you know, being the competitive person that I am, I didn't forget about that. And I even remember during our draft, they told me, oh, well, you know, we would love to take you at number 2, but we have to take Romel. Because again, you know, all of his, you know, accomplishments in the NBA, and he was a former MVP in that league. And again, with my competitiveness, man, and, you know, winning my first championship my rookie year, then having to wait 6 years before, you know, I got another one. And that time when we played against Powerade, I mean, that was talking Texas run, you know, through the PBA. And, you know, we got into it, and I might be small, but I can carry my own weight. So
we got your own weight.
It was a minor scuffle. It was a minor entanglement.
I'll say this though. It wasn't an accurate description on YouTube. They should rename the video. It's not an actual fight. It is the ultimate lesson in physics, though, that the lower your center of gravity is, the more you can channel your strength. And if this big dude doesn't know that you're competitive enough and a little crazy enough to toss him into the front row, he won't see it coming.
You know, it's the finals, man. You know, it's the finals. So
what gets me is how you walk away with your hands up to the ref, because you knew I could see in the video, you see it clearly. You're looking at the corner of your eye. He's coming for you. And then you have your hands up going, hey, watch this. And then he comes at you, and then you're like, oh, Ali. And then Ali comes in right in the nick of time, just stops everything. And you're like, I don't know what happened there, man. I don't know what happened. And I'm like, classic. As a small guy myself, I was like all over it. I felt like it was the run all over again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, you know, when you're a small guard in the PBA, you do have to stand your ground, and you do have to, you know, fight for everything that you get. Because if you don't, you know, there's so many great players in the PBA. If you don't take that mindset as a smaller guard, you'll get eaten alive. And I knew that. And so I wasn't taking no BS from nobody, especially if there was the championship on the line. But, you know, again, you know, Rommel's a great dude. And that was all just part of the competitiveness of playing in the finals.
And the thing that I love most about that clip, apart from watching that Talking Text team all together again, is just reliving some of the memories, you know, of that run. And you know, growing up, my favorite player was Olsen, and I had always rooted for, you know, the San Miguel teams that he was on, DI, Danny S, and stuff like that. So in our home, Olsen is like God. So when I actually became friends with Olsen Rosella, my dad threatened me and told me never to bring him to the house. He's like, whatever happens, don't ever bring him to the house because it'd be awkward. Like, I'm a grown man. I'm older than he is, but like, I'll be a fan. So, but I remember any time San Miguel would play Talking Text, I'd be like, I don't want to watch it. You guys were so good and you guys played basketball so well. You know, as a team, with pace, with just the right amount of toughness, but, you know, this system that was equal parts flashy and disciplined, you guys were so good. I didn't like watching you guys play because I was imagining, well, okay, if San Miguel plays in 7-game series, what do we got? Nope, nothing. There's no way to stop that. When you go back on your pro career, is that kind of like, you know, when you're putting together the highlight reel in your head, is that kind of like the moment, that stretch where you go, yep, that's when we were playing at our best. That was when basketball was at its best for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Man, you know, I, you know, it's funny, Nico, you hear so many people when, you know, they walk away from the game and, you know, retired, it really gives you a chance, a clear view to look back on your career, right? And your experience. And I tell you, man, I look back at our days during that Talking Text run where, I mean, we were dominating the league for a good 3.5-4 years. And, you know, we were loaded, right? At every position. I mean, so what team has me and Jason, Larry and Ryan Reyes, Jared Dillinger and Harvey Carey, you know, Kelly Williams and Ronaldel De Ocampo, Ollie Peak at the five, you know, Kelly would slide to the five every now and then. And on top of all that talent that we had, it was the relationship, man, the chemistry and camaraderie that we had. Like, you know, we obviously, we've all gone our separate ways, whether we were retired or still playing or for different teams. But I'm telling you, we could get back together tomorrow and it would be just like yesterday. And it would take us right back to those moments when we were together, because, you know, the winning was great, man. The championships were great, but we had gone through so much off the court together. You know, that only strengthened our bond on the court. And, you know, it just created an environment and a space at practice where, man, ask any of the guys on that team. And it was like, we looked forward to going to practice because we knew we were going to go at each other, but it was going to be competitive. You know, no one was going to try to like intentionally hurt each other, but we were going to push each other. And we knew, because we created that space at practice, come game time, man, it was on. And it was a lot of fun.
I knew outside of the championships, which obviously you do a whole lot to bring a group closer. But I know that the other thing that really brought that team together was, and I've proven this because I've had conversations with some of you guys as a group and obviously you guys as individuals, as we've all become friends. Every single one of those names that you just mentioned, you all have a Chot impression. And every single one has this impression of Chot. And I'm like, these guys all have jokes about the shirts he used to wear, one, because I mean, wow.
And unique, to say the least.
Since then, Coach Chot has kind of like grown out of it. But I mean, wow, the shirt choices then were just magnificent. And second of all, and Jared does this the most, and I think Jared does it the best, but all of these just, everyone just kind of goes into this chot voice. And I remember now that I'm thinking about it, as I got older and I rewatched some of those games, I'm like, what's he so mad for all the time? You guys are up 16. There's like 2 minutes left. He was just always pissed off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Coach Chot always pushed us, but, you know, he also gave us space because he knew, you know, he knew the talent was there, and he, you know, he saw for himself. He saw the chemistry and camaraderie that we had built, you know, within our team. But yeah, man, you know, whether it was the shirts or the shoes, man, take your pick. I mean, man, he would challenge the NBA league fits.
Oh, I wish we had league fits there, man. I might just bring back, like, I might make an account just chot fits and then just go back at some of the old chot outfits.
Man, I would never dare wear a lot of those outfits, but, you know, he pulled it off.
I mean, when you're raising trophies, and when you're winning championships, it's actually fitting to be wearing some of the outfits that he wore. I miss flashy outfit shot, man. I wish we could bring it back. Hey, before we continue with more of the Mighty Mouse, the Call to Arms podcast, brought to you guys, as always, by the amigo, Toby from HR. Original art is by Alan Martin, that's double T. And of course, original theme music, track called Tropical Vikings by Careless Music Manila. Shout out to the gang. Shout out to King Wow, my good friend, Mr. Brett Jackson. Thank you very much for the love and the support. And again, next episode, we're going to start opening up a presenting sponsor slot free of charge for a small business that a Call to Arms podcast listener is running. So if you guys want to get in on that, it's our way of thanking you. It's our way of supporting our own. This is your podcast as it is ours. So do let us know about that, whatever small business it is that you're running and that you started running over the quarantine. Myself and the amigo, more than happy to support. You guys can present the next episode of the Call to Arms podcast. Just hit us up, let us know. All right, now back with more Jimmy Alipag. Okay, this is something that I wanted to ask you, because, you know, myself and Toby were on this pod. We look at social media all the time. We were seeing it, especially during, you know, the bubble for the PBA. It happens in the NBA, happens in the PBA as well. You look at the Facebook comments and all of that, and there's this recurring theme always of fans, you know, and they're very, very passionate about their teams, and I understand that. But fans sometimes, you know, tend to drift into the disrespectful side when talking about a particular player who they feel isn't good enough, or a particular player who, you know, wishes they could trade for someone else, or this and that. This player's garbage, that player sucks, and stuff like that. Yeah. Now, I've been put in a position to have shared the court with yourself, some other PBA players. You know, I've been lucky enough to do that, whether it's some promo stuff that we did for Nike, you know, or just us messing around. And you very, very quickly realize there's inter-barangay MVP level of basketball, which most people aren't even at. And then there's maybe your college team MVP level of basketball player that's right here. And then maybe about 30 floors higher than that is the practice player on a PBA team that's trying to crack a roster. Mm-hmm. If they're there, if we're talking PBA contract level player, that's 20 nothing on any court, any given day, him wearing flip-flops, easy. Is there any player that you remember who maybe didn't get the All-Star games, maybe didn't, you know, get the MVPs or, you know, the fame and the national team selections, but when you think of that player, you're like, oh my God, that player gave me the business every time I played him?
Oh yeah. I mean, I have, this is actually an easy question, Nico. I always felt like, I think his entire career, he was just incredibly underrated, but he was so good. I mean, even up until the time that he walked away, I think just last year, PJ Simone.
Okay.
You know, he was just so efficient, man, how he played. I mean, he would take 11 shots and it's like, how does he have 25 points and 8 assists? You know, he would be 9 for 11 from the field, 5 for 5 from the free throw line, you know, 2 for 3 from the 3-point line, and he wouldn't say a word. You know, wouldn't do any crazy like 3 whatever, like guns blade, nothing like that. He would just give you buckets and he would go back down the other way and play defense. And, you know, I mean, PJ wasn't that much bigger than me physically. You know, PJ's about what, 6'1", maybe 6'2" on a good day, maybe 6'2" on a good day. So we had a few inches on me, but anytime we played Pure Foods, you know, they always made it a point to try to post me up. And, you know, here I am, I'm fighting for position at the post, trying to push him away and let him catch it a little bit outside of his comfort zone. And I tell you, Nico, no matter where he caught it, whether it was a back down or whether he faced up, he would always get into that one hand
floater,
whatever floater, hanging shot, whatever. And remember, especially back in the day, like I could jump too. And I mean, countless times he would jump, I would jump, and we would be right there. And then my hand would drop and the ball would still be in his hand and he'd let it go and it'd be another bucket. And he just used to absolutely give me fits. And, you know, the competitiveness that I had in me, I would want to go back down the court and go right at him. And, you know, whether I scored or I didn't, he wouldn't say a word. Then he'd go back down the court, back down to the post again. And yeah, it was trouble. It was trouble for me over there.
No arm sleeve, no compression, anything.
No, nothing. Nothing.
No wristband, no headband. Your basic, like, crew sock. The same sneakers he'd worn at the start of last season. And I know this because he's one of our Titan guys. And yeah, sometimes you have to remind him, hey, PJ, you want to replace your sneakers? And he's like, oh, they still work. They're fine. Jersey, one size too loose. And then just... he looks like he woke up, laced up some sneakers, and he's like, all right, 25 on you today, on your head. Yeah.
And you wouldn't know whether they were up 20 or down 20. I mean, he would just play the game. And like I said, man, you know, I mean, with a team with James Yap, with Ping and those guys, you know, it was amazing to see how you play with a Hall of Fame guy like James or a Hall of Fame guy like Ping, and he just found his space to where he could be super effective. And he was, man, he was such a big key for them, because you know what you're going to get from James, and you knew what Ping was going to do, you know, with the rebound and the defense. But again, just from an efficiency standpoint, man, he was tough. He was one of the best for sure.
I remember having a conversation with Gabe Norwood in the middle of a semis that they were playing against San Mig Coffee at the time, and he said he would wake up in the middle of the night having nightmares about this one hand floater that
I believe it.
Mark Barocha shot, PJ Simone shot it, James obviously had it. Ping eventually picked it up. And then what Gabe said was the worst one was when they started teaching Joe to do that. And Joe's now starting to do it left-handed. And he's like, all these one-hand floaters, you can't time, you can't reach. And they get like 20 points per game out of that combined. Just that
and,
one
and
shot.
And it goes in a lot.
So frustrating. I was the look on Gabe's face, I was like, it must be so frustrating. He's like, you know what shot PJ is gonna take, you know, he's gonna get to his spot, hop step, and then jump straight up with that one hand thing. And Gabe's like, he was telling me, Nico, like, I block shots for a living. And he's like, I still can't get to it.
Exactly. And you know, you're talking about, you know, one of the league's all-time best defenders in Gabe, right? So if he has a hard time blocking his shot, remember, in what, 700 PBA games I played, I only had 4 career blocks.
No.
So I definitely wasn't blocking no PJ Simone floater. So yeah.
Do you remember any of the blocks?
I should have called Ali for help a lot sooner than I probably did when we played.
Do you remember any of those four blocks?
Well, you know, Nico, if you break down four blocks in 700 games, that's about one in every 175 games or so.
I'm gonna find one for you, Cap.
I need to ask Fidel, like, does anybody have video of my best career block?
I'm gonna find a video of one of these four blocks. I'm gonna freeze frame it and put it up on a poster right here and send a copy to your house. I promise you this. This will be my life's work. I'm heading to Libis right now. I'm going to go into the PBA office and dig up the footage. It's just 700 games. You only average like 38 minutes per game in those 700. I'll find it someday.
You have to search deep, deep in the archives for those. But they're in there. Those four are in there somewhere.
I love how you remember that there's only four. Okay. One thing you did do well, and one thing you did a lot of, and you got this. This is pure easy money for you. And, you know, this is kind of one of the things that we wanted to start doing on season two of the podcast, because we realized there's so many of these basketball conversations, so many of these basketball podcasts that don't talk like basketball. And when I started covering the PBA specifically and started attending you guys at practice, when I was watching you guys at Gilas practice, I remember a couple of times after our Titan camp, Alab would start practice and I'd just sit there on the side and watch you run a practice. The thing that always got to me was the language, the terminology. It doesn't matter how much NBA, PBA you watch, a lot of the times, and maybe this is, you know, our fault as commentators, as analysts, we don't use necessarily the language that players and coaches use. And that's, you know, a huge disconnect in learning the game sometimes. So that's why I wanted to make sure we talk about at least something that's maybe a little bit on the jargon list of basketball. But one of the things I loved watching you do was run a drag screen. And I remember anytime Gilas played and I'd see you bringing the ball down, my friends and family all hate me for this, because I'd always be yelling at the TV. I'd always be yelling, drag screen, drag screen. I'd always be like, Marcus, give him a drag screen. Fourth quarter, first quarter, damn man. That's all I wanted. All I wanted was Gilas to run drag screens for Jimmy Alapag every possession down, and I was willing to live with it. Talk to me like I'm an idiot. Talk to me like I'm a basketball fan, but I don't know the language that you guys use. What's a drag screen, and why was it something that, you know, in my opinion, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but was so effective for you in your career?
No, for sure. You know, it was something that I looked for probably every possession, because when you hear people say drag screen, immediately the first thought that comes to mind is that it's a screen that happens in transition. And
right.
The reason why a drag screen is so dangerous is because, especially teams that play with pace, when the guard's pushing the ball up that sideline, the defense is kind of in a scramble mode because they're trying to get their matchups. Sometimes you might have cross matchups. And so while all that's going on and the defense is trying to communicate and trying to pick up who they're supposed to have, as all that's happening, now you have your big guy literally sprinting into this drag screen, to where, you know, if you have a guard who can shoot off the screen or get downhill, it creates a lot of problems. Or even, you know, flipping the screen and making it a punch screen, to where you're attacking on the baseline side. It just opens up so much, not only from a scoring perspective, but by getting into the lane, like we just talked about, whether it's the Baroka, PJ Simone, James Yap floater, which is so popular in the game now as opposed to 10, 15 years ago, except for maybe Mark Cardona. but just getting a paint touch, you have guys who can get to the rim. Now you're opening up kickouts to the corners or the, you know, the the throwback passes to the stretch four or stretch five. So it just opens up so much on the court. And again, for teams that play with pace and really put pressure on the defense to push the ball and get the team kind of in that scramble defensive, you know, setup, getting that early drag screen, you know, can really create a lot of problems. And yeah, it was, you know, it was a favorite of mine, you know, watching guys like Steve Nash and Stockton run it all the time. You know, it can literally pick apart a defense. And so, yeah, it was definitely one of my favorites.
Do you have a favorite drag screen partner, and what actually makes a good drag screen partner? Maybe who this favorite is and what made him so good at it.
Well, during my PBA days, for sure, Rondell and Harvey, you know, Rondell Del Campo, Harvey Carey, because, you know, with Harvey, he was so great at the timing of the screen. He knew when to slip, when to get some contact. You know, I think maybe it was his ability and his vision of seeing the guy defending me and what he needed to do. But whether it was a slip or whether it was a solid screen, it was always such a hard dive. And he just kind of had a knack to find the gap to where as soon as I turned the corner, that window would be open to make that pocket pass. And he was there all the time. And with Rondell, you know, again, we used to work on it so much. Like with Harvey and I, it was more just kind of, I just always knew where he was going to be. With Rondell, when he came over to Talking Text, it was something that we worked on. And it got to the point where I knew where he would be. And, you know, whether it was Rondell rolling to the basket and finishing at the rim, or his ability to stretch out and pick and pop, I mean, it was one of our go-to plays at the end game. So those two guys for sure. And then when we went to Gila's, you know, having Rondell there and then having Ping there, very similar to Harvey in terms of his reads and his dives and being able to get into the paint. And then again, that dang one arm floater in the paint. Yes, those three guys stand out for sure.
Yeah, you talked through that pick and pop with Rondell, and I just remembered again all of the times that you guys ran it on Talk and Text. That was pick your poison. That was just impossible to defend. That's you as a defense hoping one of you guys miss. That's essentially the best defense for that. Is I hope you got a plug upstairs in God's ear, and he's gonna flick that ball and force one of you guys to miss, because it's always right decision, it's always high quality shot, and obviously between you and Rondell open for three, it's like there's just no way.
And you know what I think, especially during our time with Talking Text, what made it so dangerous was people were so worried about Rondell and I, but then we still had Kelly rolling or running to the rim, and so then somebody would have to worry about that. And then in the corners we had Larry or Ryan or JD. So, you know, guys were really left on an island to decide what they wanted to take away. And yeah, I mean, I always knew worst comes to worst, call that high ball screen for Rondell and we'll be all right.
Yeah, that's why when you ask PBA players of that era, what was the most fun they had, Talking Text never gets brought up, because you guys were not fun to play against. And it always meant you guys would get the win bonus and they wouldn't. So, you know, don't take it personally that not a lot of those players have you as their favorites. You cost people a whole lot of money during that run. Anyway, Coach, I know it's late there. I've taken up a lot of your time, and I appreciate you letting me chop it up with you. This was mostly selfish. Part of it was to get you on the podcast to restart, to start off our new season, with obviously one of the people we look up to the most and we love the most. But a lot of it was selfish because I just hadn't seen you in a while and talked to you, and I just wanted an excuse to get you on the Zoom and speak with you. But this means a lot to myself, to Toby, to the worms who tune in, to everybody who listens to this podcast. And we really, really do appreciate you making time.
No, thank you, Nico. You know, and also to Toby, it's great to see you guys, man. You know, I mean, I still got a lot of love, and you know, we miss being in Manila. And you know, who knows down the road, you know, I'll be seeing you guys again. sometime down the road. But, you know, congratulations again on season two. And it's great to always talk basketball, man, especially in the times that we're in, you know, being away from the game. I can talk basketball all day. So, you know, thank you guys for having me.
Coach, I appreciate you again making time. You know, you're such a great role model for so many of us, because of the way you played basketball, because of the way you judo tossed Romelu Ducul into the first row. But now that I'm married, and now that I'm hopefully going to have a family soon, I just realize much more how much. You know, I guess learned from you and my time around you and LJ and your family and your kids. And now I feel pressure. I've never felt the need to be like you, because I knew I could never shoot or play basketball like you. But now that I'm going to be probably, you know, now that I'm a husband and I'll eventually become a father, I feel pressure to be Jimmy Alapag. I feel like I'm coming off the bench for Talking Tex. Scared out of my mind. It's big shoes to fill, but hopefully we all can do it just like you do it.
Hey man, no pressure, man. Just enjoy your sleep now before the little one comes in the future.
Oh trust me, I'm still trying to get a growth spurt in. Coach, thanks a lot for making time. Really appreciate you.
Appreciate it, Nico. I'll talk to you guys soon.
I want a million lives. I want a billion profits when all that I got is a villainous mind. I keep it real in the pocket while you hear the venomous lies. I do not speak like a prophet, cause I got a million styles. Let's see what's really inside. Pulling over in the whip, flying out another tree.